Chapter 22. A crowd was already waiting in the cloister of the Katharinenkirche. Almost all of them were sitting on suitcases and baskets, or were surrounded by packages and bundles. Most of them were women and children. Graeber took his place among them with his roll of bedding and bags. An old woman with a face like a horse was sitting beside him.
"If only they don't ship us out as evacuees," she said. "You hear such stories about that, living in barracks with not enough to eat and the farmers being cross and mean."
"I don't care if they do,"
a thin girl replied.
"I only want to get away. Anything is better than being dead. It's their duty to take care of us. We have lost all our possessions. It's their duty to take care of us."
"A few days ago, a train with evacuees from the Rhineland came through here. What a sight! They were on their way to Mecklenburg."
"Mecklenburg? That's where the rich farmers live."
"Rich farmers?"
The woman with the horse's face laughed angrily.
"With them, you have to work till the flesh drops from your bones. In return, you get short rations. The Führer ought to be told about it."
Graeber looked at Horseface and at the thin girl. Behind them, through the open Romanesque colonnade, the first green shimmered in the cathedral garden. Jonquils were in bloom in front of the statues in the cloister. A thrush perched singing on the figure of Christ being scourged.
"They'll have to billet us gratis," the thin girl declared, "with people who are well off. We're victims of war, victims of war," she repeated.
The sexton approached. He was a thin man with a pendulous red nose and drooping shoulders. Graeber could not picture him having the courage to hide anyone the Gestapo were looking for. The sexton let the people in. He gave each a number for his belongings and stuck a slip of paper with the same number on the bundles and bags.
"Don't come too late this evening," he said to Graeber. "We haven't enough room in the church."
Not enough room? The Katharinenkirche was a large building.
"No. The nave of the church is not used as a shelter, only the rooms underneath and the side aisles."
"Where do the people sleep who come late?"
"In those cloisters that are still standing. A good many sleep in the cloister gardens, too."
"Are the rooms under the nave of the church bomb-proof?" The sexton looked at Graeber mildly.
"When the church was built, no one had thought up anything of that kind. It was during the Dark Ages."
The red-nosed face was entirely expressionless. It did not betray itself by so much as the tiniest twinkle.
"We have made great advances in dissimulation," Graeber thought. "Almost everyone is a little master."
He walked through the garden and out through the cloisters. The church had been severely damaged. One of its towers had caved in, and daylight poured into it mercilessly, cutting broad, bright bands through its dusky twilight. A number of windows were broken as well. Sparrows sat in them, twittering. The seminary had been entirely demolished. Close behind it was the air raid shelter. Graeber went into it. It was a reinforced ancient wine cellar, which had formerly belonged to the church. The stands for the barrels were still there. The air was damp and cool and aromatic. The wine bouquet of the centuries still seemed able to triumph again and again over the smell of fear from the nights of bombs. In the rear of the bunker, Graeber saw a number of heavy iron rings fixed in the square-cut stones of the ceiling. He remembered that before being a wine cellar, this place had been a torture chamber for witches and heretics. They had been hoisted by their hands with irons attached to their feet, and they had been pinched with glowing tongs until they confessed. Then they had been put to death in the name of God and Christian love of one's neighbor.
"Very little has changed," he thought. "The torturers in the concentration camp have excellent models, and the carpenter's son of Nazareth has strange followers."
He was walking along Adlerstrasse. It was 6 o'clock in the evening. He had been looking all day for a room and had found nothing. Wearily, he had decided to give it up for today. The section was badly devastated, row after row of ruins. Listlessly, he walked on among them. Then suddenly he saw something that at first he could not believe. In the midst of the devastation stood a small two-storied house. It was old and a little crooked, but it was entirely undamaged. The garden lay around it with a few trees and bushes coming into leaf, and everything was untouched. It was an oasis in the wilderness of ruins. Above the garden fence, lilac bushes were budding, and not a single picket of the fence was broken. 10 paces on either side, the lunar wilderness began again. But this tiny old garden and this tiny old house had been spared by one of those miracles that sometimes go with destruction. Inn and Restaurant Vita was painted over the front door. The garden gate was open. He went in. He was no longer surprised to find that not a pane in the windows had been broken. It almost had to be so. The miraculous always lies in wait close by despair. A brown and white hunting dog lay sleeping beside the door. A few flower beds were abloom with jonquils, violets, and tulips. It seemed to him as though he had seen all this once before. He did not know when. It seemed a long time ago. But perhaps he had only dreamed it. He walked through the door. The tap room was empty. There were only a few glasses standing on the shelves, no bottles at all. The tap was shiny, but the sieve under it was dry. 3 tables with chairs around them stood along the wall. A picture hung over the center one. It was a Tyrolean landscape. In it, a girl was playing a zither, and a huntsman was leaning over her. There was no picture of Hitler, nor had Graeber expected one. A middle-aged woman came in. She was wearing a faded blue blouse with sleeves shirt at the shoulders. She did not say Heil Hitler. She said, "Good evening," and there was actually something of the evening in it. After a day full of good work, it was the wish for a good evening. Once there used to be things like this, Graeber thought. He had only intended to get something to drink. The dust of the ruins had made him thirsty, but now it suddenly seemed very important to spend the evening here with Elisabeth. He foresaw it would be a good evening, beyond the dark circle of destruction that lay as far as the horizon on all sides of this enchanted garden. "Can one get supper here?" he asked. The woman hesitated. "I have coupons," he said quickly. "It would be wonderful to eat here, perhaps even in the garden. It's one of my last days before I have to go away. For my wife and me. I have coupons for both of us. If you like, I can bring canned goods as well to trade." "We only have lentil soup. We're really not serving anymore." "Lentil soup will be splendid. I haven't had any in a long time." The woman smiled. It was a quiet smile that seemed to take form of itself. "If that's enough for you, then come. You can sit in the garden, too, if you like. Or here, if it's too cool." "In the garden. It will still be light enough. Can we come around at 8 o'clock? With lentil soup, you don't have to be too punctual. Just come when you like." A letter had been stuck under the doorplate of his parents' house. It was from his mother. They had forwarded it to him from the front. He tore it open. The letter was brief. His mother wrote that his father and she were going to leave the city next morning with a transport. They did not know yet where they were being taken. He was not to worry. It was just a precautionary safety measure. He looked at the date. The letter had been written a week before his furlough. There was nothing in it about an air raid, but his mother always was cautious. She was afraid of the censors. It was unlikely that the house had been bombed on the following night. It must have happened earlier. Otherwise, they would not have been selected to go with the transport. He slowly folded the letter and put it into his pocket. So his parents were alive. He was as sure of it now as one could be. He looked around. Something like a wavy glass wall seemed to be sinking into the ground in front of him. Suddenly, Hakenstrasse looked like all the other bombed streets. The dread and torment that had hung over number 18 had been silently blown away. There was nothing more there but debris and ruins, like everywhere else. He took a deep breath. He felt no joy, only a profound release. A burden that had oppressed him all the time and everywhere had suddenly dropped from his shoulders. He did not reflect that now he would probably not see his parents during his furlough. The long uncertainty had already buried that hope. They were alive. That was enough. They were alive. With that fact, something was terminated, and he was free. During the last raid, the street had received a few hits. The house of which only the facade had been standing had collapsed. The door, with the ruins journal, was now propped up, a little farther on between the piles of rubble. Graeber was just wondering what might have become of the mad air raid warden when he saw him coming from across the street.
"The soldier!" said the warden. "Still here?"
"Yes, you too, it appears."
"Did you find your letter?"
"Yes."
"It came yesterday afternoon. Can we strike you off the door now? We need this space badly. There are 5 applicants for it."
"Not yet," Graeber said. "In a couple of days."
"It's high time," the warden declared,
as sharply and severely as though he were a schoolteacher rebuking a disobedient child.
"We have been very patient with you."
"Are you the editor of this journal?"
"An air raid warden is everything. He maintains order. We have a widow whose 3 children have been missing since the last raid. We need a place to announce it."
"Then take mine. Apparently I get my mail at the ruin over there anyway." The warden took down Graeber's notice and handed it to him. Graeber was about to tear it up when the warden seized his hand.
"Are you crazy, soldier? You don't tear something like that. If you did, you'd be tearing up your luck. Once saved, always saved, as long as you keep that notice. You really still are a beginner."
"Yes," Graeber said, folding the notice and putting it in his pocket. "And that's the way I'd like to stay as long as I can. Where are you living now?"
"I had to move. I found a snug cellar corner. Live there now as a subtenant of a family of mice. Very entertaining."
Graeber looked at the man. His haggard face betrayed nothing.
"I intend to found a society," he announced, "for people whose relations are buried under the ruins. We must stand together, otherwise the city will do nothing. At the very least, each place where people are buried must be blessed by a priest so that it will be consecrated ground. Do you understand that?"
"Yes, I understand."
"Good. There are people who think it's foolish. You, of course, haven't any reason now for becoming a member. You've gotten your damn letter."
The haggard face suddenly fell apart. An expression of bewildered pain and rage seemed to break it into pieces. The man turned around abruptly and stomped back along the street. Graeber looked after him. Then he went on. He decided not to tell Elizabeth that his parents were still alive. She came alone across the square in front of the factory. She seemed very lost and small. The twilight made the square bigger than usual, and the low buildings beyond it more bare and menacing.
"I'm going to get some time off," she said breathlessly. "Again?"
"How long?"
"3 days. The last 3 days."
She stopped. Her eyes changed. They were suddenly full of tears.
"I told them why," she said. "They gave me the 3 days right away. Perhaps I'll have to make them up later, but that doesn't matter. Afterwards, nothing matters. It's really better if I have a lot to do."
Graeber made no reply. The realization that they would have to part had struck in front of him like a dark meteor. He had known it all the time, the way one knows many things, without actually realizing them or completely feeling them. There had always been so much in between. Now, all at once, it was there by itself, big and full of a chill horror, and it was radiating a pale, penetrating, skeletonizing light, like X-rays that pierce through the charm and magic of life, leaving nothing but the bare residue and the inevitable. They looked at each other. Both felt the same thing. They stood in the empty square and looked at each other, and each knew what the other was suffering. They had the feeling that they were reeling in a storm, but they did not move. Despair, from which they had found escape again and again, had finally caught up with them, and they saw each other now as they would really be. Graeber saw Elizabeth, alone, in the factory, in an air raid shelter, or in some room waiting without much hope, and she saw him returning to war for a cause in which he no longer believed. Despair shook them, and at the same time, like a cloudburst, there descended on them a fatal tenderness to which they dared not yield because they felt they would be torn to pieces once they admitted it. They were helpless. They could do nothing. They had to wait until it passed. It seemed forever before Graeber could speak. He saw the tears were gone from Elizabeth's eyes. She had not stirred. It was as though they had flowed inward. "Then we will be together for a couple of whole days," he said. She smiled.
"Yes, beginning tomorrow evening."
"Good. Then it's as though we still had a couple of weeks, if we count it the old way. A couple of weeks with you having only evenings free."
"Yes."
They walked on. In the empty windows in the wall of a house, the red of evening hung like a forgotten curtain.
"Where shall we go?"
Elizabeth asked.
"And where are we going to sleep?"
"We'll sleep in the cloisters of the church, or in the cloister garden, if it's warm enough. And now we are going to eat lentil soup." The restaurant Vita emerged from between the ruins. For a moment it seemed odd to Graeber that it was still there. It was as improbable as a Fata Morgana. They went through the garden gate.
"What do you say to this?" he asked.
"It looks like a patch of peace the war has overlooked."
"Yes, and that's the way it's to stay for this evening."
The flower beds smelled strongly of earth. Someone had recently watered them. The hunting dog came around the house wagging his tail. He was licking his chops as though he had just eaten. Frau Vitta came toward them. She had put on a white apron.
"Would you like to sit in the garden?"
she asked.
"Yes,"
Elizabeth said.
"And I should like to wash, if that's possible."
"Certainly." Frau Vitta led Elizabeth into the house and upstairs. Graeber went past the kitchen into the garden. A table with a red and white checked cloth and two chairs had been made ready. Glasses and plates stood on it, and a faintly frosted water pitcher. He drank a glass thirstily. The water was cold and tasted better than wine. The garden was larger than one would have thought from outside. It consisted of a patch of lawn, which was already fresh and green, elder and lilac bushes, and a few ancient trees in new leaf. Elizabeth came back.
"Just how did you find it?"
"By accident. How else could one find something like this?" She walked across the grass and fingered the buds on the bushes.
"Lilac buds already. They're still green and sharp. Soon they will bloom."
"Yes," Graeber said. "They will bloom in a couple of weeks." Elizabeth came to him. She smelled of soap and fresh water and youth.
"It's beautiful here. And it's strange. I feel as if I had been here once before."
"I felt that way too when I saw it."
"It's as though all this had been here before. You and I and this garden, and as though there were only a tiny something missing. The last little bit, and I would be able to recall everything exactly as it was then."
She laid her head on his shoulder.
"It will never happen. One is always stopped just short of it. But perhaps we actually did live all this once before, and will go on living it over forever."
Frau Vitta came out with a soap tureen. "I would like to give you our ration coupons now," Graeber said. "We haven't many. Some of ours got burned, but these will probably be enough."
"I won't need them all," Frau Vitta declared. "We had the lentils from before. I need just a few for the sausage. I'll bring back the rest later. Would you like something to drink? We have a few bottles of beer."
"That's magnificent. Beer is exactly what we'd like." The sunset was now only a pale glow. A thrush began to sing. Graeber remembered he had heard one at noon. It had been sitting on a station of the cross. Since then, a lot had happened. He lifted the cover of the tureen.
"Sausage. Good Bologna sausage. And lentils, cooked thick. A superb dish."
He filled the plates, and for a moment, it seemed to him as though he possessed a house and a garden and a wife and a table and food and security, and as though there were peace. "Elizabeth," he said, "if you were offered a pact, that you could live this way for the next 10 years, with the ruins and this garden and we two together, would you sign it?
Instantly. And for longer.
So would I. Frau Witte brought the beer. Graeber opened the bottles and filled their glasses. They drank. The beer was cool and good. They ate the soup. They ate it slowly and calmly, looking at each other. It grew darker. A searchlight cut across the sky. It poked at the clouds and slid on. The thrush had stopped singing. Night began. Frau Witte came to refill the tureen.
You haven't eaten enough, she said. Young people should eat heartily.
We have eaten all we could. The tureen is almost empty.
I'll bring you some salad, too, and a piece of cheese.
The moon came up.
Now we have everything, Elizabeth said. The moon, the garden, and we have eaten and still have the whole evening before us. It's so beautiful you can hardly stand it.
This is the way people used to live all the time, and they didn't consider it anything special. She nodded and looked around.
You can't see a single ruin from here. This garden is arranged so that you just don't see them. The trees cover them. To think there are whole countries like this.
We will go to them after the war. We will see nothing but undestroyed cities, and in the evening they will be lighted and no one will go in fear of bombs. We will stroll past shop windows full of lights, and it will be so bright we'll actually be able to recognize one another's face on the street at night.
Will they let us in?
For a trip? Why not? The Swiss, for instance.
We'll have to have Swiss francs. How can we get them?
We'll take cameras with us and sell them there. We can live on that for a couple of weeks. Elizabeth laughed.
Or jewelry, or fur coats that we don't have.
Frau Witte came with the salad and cheese.
You like it here?
Yes, very much. Can we stay a little longer?
As long as you like. I'll bring you coffee, too. Malt coffee, of course.
Coffee as well. Today we're living like princes, Graeber said. Elizabeth laughed again.
It was in the beginning that we lived like princes, with pâté de foie gras and caviar and wine from the Rhine. Now we are living like human beings, the way we will live afterwards. Isn't it beautiful to live?
Yes, Elizabeth. Graeber looked at her. She had seemed weary when she came from the factory. Now she was entirely restored. That never took long with her, and it didn't require much.
It will be beautiful to live, she said. We're so unused to it, unused to so much. That's why we have so much before us still. Things that are a matter of course to other people will be a great adventure to us. Even air that does not smell of burning, or a dinner without ration coupons, stores where you can buy what you like, cities that haven't been bombed, or to be able to talk without first looking all around. Not to need to be afraid anymore. That will take a long time, but the fear will grow less and less, and even if it comes back once in a while, it will be a joy because we will know at once that we no longer need to feel it. Do you believe that?
Yes, Graeber said with an effort. Yes, Elizabeth. If you look at it that way, there's still a lot of happiness ahead of us. They stayed as long as they could. Graeber paid for the meal, and Frau Witte went to bed. Thus, they were able to remain there alone for a while longer. The moon rose higher. The night smell of the ground and the young foliage grew stronger, and as there was no wind, it drove out for the moment the smell of dust and rubbish that hung constantly over the city. There was a rustling in the bushes where a cat was hunting rats. There were many more rats in the town than formerly. They found plenty to eat under the ruins. At 11 o'clock, they left. It was like leaving an island.
You are too late, the sexton said when they arrived. All the places are taken.
It was not the one who had been there that morning. This one was younger, clean-shaven, stiff and dignified. Probably it was he who had denounced Josef, Graeber thought.
Can we sleep in the cloister garden?
There are already people sleeping in all the covered places in the cloister garden,
Why don't you go to the emergency relief station?
At 12 o'clock at night, this was an idiotic question.
We trust more in God,
Graber replied. The sexton looked at him sharply for a moment.
If you want to stay here, you must sleep in the open.
That doesn't matter.
Are you married?
Yes, why?
This is a house of God. People who are not married can't sleep together here. In the cloister, we have a section for men and another for women.
Even when they're married?
Even then. The cloister belongs to the church. There is no lust of the flesh here. You two don't look married.
Graber pulled out his marriage certificate. The sexton put on his Nikolai glasses and studied it in the glow of the eternal light.
A very short time, he said then.
There's no ruling about that in the catechism.
Did you have a church wedding, too?
Listen, Graber said. We're tired. My wife has been working hard. We are going now to sleep in the cloister garden. If you have any objections, try to drive us out. But bring others with you. It won't be easy.
Suddenly a priest was standing beside him. He had come up noiselessly.
What is this?
The sexton explained the matter. The priest interrupted him after a few sentences.
Beaumare, don't play God Almighty. It's bad enough that these people have to sleep here.
He turned to Graber.
If you have no place to stay tomorrow, come to Domhof number 7 at 9 o'clock in the evening. Pastor Biedendieck, my housekeeper will find a place for you somehow.
Many thanks.
Biedendieck nodded and walked on.
On your way, you non-commissioned officer of God, Graber said to the sexton. A major has just given you an order. You have to obey. The church is the one dictatorship that has been successful through the centuries. Which way to the cloister garden?
The sexton led them through the sacristy. The vestments for the mass shimmered. Then came a door and a passage and a cloister garden.
But don't camp on the graves of the cathedral capitularies, Bummer growled. Stay over there on the side next to the cloister. Also, you are not allowed to sleep together, just next to each other. Each bed must be separate, and undressing is forbidden.
Even shoes?
Not shoes.
They walked across. A polyphonic concert of snores rose from the cloisters. Graber spread out the canvas and the blankets on the grass. He looked at Elizabeth. She laughed.
What are you laughing at? He asked.
I am laughing at the sexton, and at you.
Good.
Graber placed the bags against the wall and made a kind of bolster of his knapsack. Suddenly a woman's scream rose above the rhythmic snoring.
No, no, oh!
It died away in a gasp.
Quiet,
someone growled. The woman shrieked again.
Quiet, thunderation,
the other voice shouted more loudly. The scream broke off as though smothered.
That's why we are the master race, Graber said. Even in our dreams, we obey orders.
They lay down. They were almost alone beside the wall. Only at either corner, dark mounds showed where others were sleeping. The moon stood behind the bomb-shattered tower. It threw a band of light on the ancient graves of the cathedral cannons. Some were broken. It had not been bombs that had done this damage. The coffins had moldered and fallen in. In the middle of the garden, a great cross rose amid the wild rose bushes. About it, beside the walk, stood the stone stations of the cross. Elizabeth and Graber lay between the station of the scourging and that of the crowning with thorns. In front of each group was a kneeling bench. Beyond, in a broad rectangle, shimmered the columns and arches of the cloisters which opened toward the garden.
Come over here to me,
Graber said.
To hell with the regulations of that ascetic sexton.